Again, Asians do like bullying like no other country's cinema.
Oh yeah, the bullies are so mean in this show.
Yeah, they're so mean. They fucking
Asian films and Stephen King based films. The bullies are fully on board with just murdering a child. Just straight murdering up. A child. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two Asian Blokes Podcast, a podcast where we talk about Asian pop culture, films, TV shows, comic books, anime, music, food, video games, whatever we're feeling at the time, really. My name is Dan with a H. With me, as always, is my co-host, Harvey. Hi, Harvey.
G'day, Dan. What's going on?
Not much, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, just the weather has been unusually hot in Melbourne for autumn.
Yeah.
But I think the heat wave or the last of the heat has died down. So I can now comfortably record stuff back in my room.
Oh, good.
Like a, you know, like a proper shut in. Having to constantly shift shit downstairs. It's kind of fun though.
I thought you were like getting aircon.
Yeah. I've got aircon, but it's downstairs. Okay. Yeah. I don't have aircon in my room.
Yeah.
Can't be able to afford
that's
that.
That's like the yet. One room in your house where you should have aircon as well. You got so many machines in your room.
I got a lot of machines. My room, it's upstairs and it has like all the machines. It's got my computer, which is probably the thing that eats up the most electricity in this house.
Yeah.
My two monitors and my my computer. But, you know, in due time, it probably wouldn't even be that much because my room's pretty small.
It is.
Yeah, I think after this year, after a few big things have ended, yeah.
After we make it big with this podcast, you'll use that this sweet podcasting money for aircon for the room.
Yeah, I mean we still need to fix a garage as well, which you helped with a little bit when you were in Melbourne.
Yeah,
We still need to do soundproofing and shit with that, but like yeah,
it's a work in progress.
Yeah, summer's been, in Melbourne, not super hot, but summer's always draining.
You know? Summer in Australia is unforgiving.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that it's cooler now. Yeah. It means that you're ready, primed and ready to record some filler.
How dare you call this filler?
No, I quite like this show, actually. So today we're going to talk about A Shop for Killers, a recent K-drama that streamed on Disney Plus. That would be the main body of the episode. But before we talk about that, Tavi, should we do our recurring segment, What Have We Been Watching? This is the part of the show where we talk about the things that we've watched. If you want to skip ahead to the A Shop for Killers review, there are time codes below.
I do have something that's a little bit different from the usual stuff.
Is it relevant to the main topic of today's episode?
No, not really.
Who cares? When has that ever stopped us before? Yeah, no, all right, yeah. What have you been watching, David? Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if my friend is listening to this episode, but she's been hounding me to watch this this particular Japanese TV drama called Brush Up Life.
Okay.
And it's about Sakura Ando's character. I've already forgotten the main character's name. Mm. But what happens to her is that she dies and then she goes to like this kind of like purgatory area where there's just a Japanese business guy behind a desk, and he tells her that she's going to be reincarnated as like an anteater, and she's like, oh well, that's a bit shit. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, you're free to like restart your life and accumulate good deeds. So what she does is she basically relives her life with all the knowledge of what she knows, but tries to accumulate good deeds. But the twist is that she dies more than once. And she keeps going back to this room. And then the guy kind of still allows her to redo her life. it wasn't really what I expected, because I was expecting something that would have been like quite introspective, and it is, but it's very light. It's a very easy watch. Like, there is no like antagonist. I guess with each like round of her life, she remembers certain things that she has to do to like save people, like, you know, stop one of the teachers having an affair with like her kindergarten teacher, so her best friend's mother wouldn't like break up or marriage would like collapse, or she'd have to save like one of her old teachers from getting like a harassment call on a train or something, because he gets accused of being a groper, but it was actually some other guy, otherwise his marriage would break down, and that kind of thing. So it's just her trying to do like different jobs. Like first starts off as like an office worker, then she starts like doing progressively like smarter jobs, because, you know, she can obviously do more with, I guess, living over 100 years essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a really it's a pretty short series. I haven't finished it yet. I've still got like a couple of episodes.
Right.
But it's got a lot of pretty renowned Japanese actresses that I've recognized. You know, Sakura Ando, who probably most people would know as the angry auntie from Godzilla Minus One.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she's really good. She's a very versatile actress, because she has to play different age groups in this show. And I'm not sure if our episode with Yuta, where we talked about Godzilla, is out.
I wouldn't be out by the time this one.
Yeah.
It's a filler episode, Tubby. We're pretty much rolling this out today, if possible.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if we mentioned that Sakura Ando in Minus One. I'm not sure if we said
I don't
in the
think
episode
we
or,
talked about her, no.
Yeah. I think we were pretty time constrained. But she plays like this really kind of older lady, even though she's around our age. She looks like, you know, an obasan in that movie. But in this show, she can look like a college student, yeah, and then it's going progressively through life.
I'm looking at stills from the show, and I barely recognize her, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. It's very, very easy to watch. You could, like, watch it with the family. It's pretty well shot for a Japanese drama. But no, I'd recommend it. It's a good show. The characters are all very likable. I think Sakura Ando is great. The show never gets overly saccharine or overly melodramatic, which is surprising. So you don't... Like, I was expecting the show to have a lot of, like, emotional gut punches, because this kind of genre in Japanese media is pretty popular. The what would you do if you could relive your life kind of thing. It's like, what was that? There was like this novel that I read, like Before the Coffee Gets Cold. And it's like the short story is about like this cafe that allows customers to drink this specific coffee, and then it lets them go back to a moment in their past to like change something or whatever, or like re-experience whatever.
I mean, I just finished watching the second season of Tokyo Revengers, and that's very much in the same vein of
season two. So I don't even know. Yeah,
yeah, that's on Disney Plus. That's very much in the same vein of like going back and righting wrongs, fixing the mistakes of the past. It's a very, you know, you could see it being a very Japanese sentiment, right?
Like,
just this society with a lot of regrets.
It is, I think so, yeah. So, yeah, I'm not sure if this is like a typical Japanese show, but the show is pretty well received from like what I've seen online. I didn't hear about it, and it's got like, some big name actors in it, or actors that I've recognized from other pieces of media. It's got Toko Miura from Drive My Car. I think it's got Kaho, and she's pretty popular, but she's from like this Hirokazu. I know her mostly from Our Little Sister. She plays one of the sisters in
It's got Shota Sumitani.
Oh yeah, that's it. Shota Sumitani. Yeah, there you go. He's in it. He's not a big character, but like, yeah, he does kind of come in like reoccurringly. Yeah. But it's a good show. It's very, very light. Like, you could watch it with anyone.
It looks good. Like, I'm looking at stills of it, and it's got that kind of like soft Japanese cinematography.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
As
yeah.
opposed to like the
looks good, yeah.
the harshly lit vibe that
harshly neon you know, light. Yeah,
that I'm familiar with of Japanese dramas, particularly. Yeah, you know. This has more of like a Muji ad kind of vibe to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's very. Oh yeah, I'll just add like it's very nostalgic as well because. A lot of the times her character growing up goes through like the 2016, 2017 era of Japan. And that's the time we were living there.
Okay.
So they make a lot of like pop culture references to stuff that was happening during that time. Like they talk about like Kimi no Nawa at points. Mm. And then there's bits where they play like some like anime songs. Like there's a bit where I think they're like, one of the characters is like telling off like a boyfriend who is like been cheating on her, and they're singing like Koi no Mega Lover, the song from one of the Death Note songs, if you remember, Maximum the Hormone.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the get you away. It's like, yeah. So they played that song, and they're like, it's really funny. Yeah, so it was quite nostalgic watching it because, like, man, all this shit, like. Happened while I was there, so I was almost like reliving like a period
is
of
there,
my
is there a scene where they get excited about Wild Speedo 7?
I don't think they could pay for the copyright.
Vin Diesel come for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's Brush Up Life.
Brush Up Life.
Seems like alternative title is rebooting as well.
I'm saying. I think the Japanese because the kanji says like Brush It Up Life. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess
sounds pretty good.
Give it a watch. Yeah, don't know where you can watch it, but give it a watch. Yeah.
Give it a watch if you can find it. But shall we get on to the meat and potatoes of today's episode, Tavi?
Yeah,
Shop for Killers.
Yes.
So this is a K-drama, action thriller K-drama, I would say, developed by Disney Korea, currently streaming on Disney Plus. Basically, it's about a girl named Ji-an, who, after the sudden passing of her uncle, is embroiled in a world of assassins, and as she uncovers the truth behind her dead uncle's secret underground business. So basically, a bunch of assassins are trying to kill her, and she's trying not to get killed. While also figuring out why they want to kill her. So this, interestingly, is a spin-off of a TV show called A Killer's Shopping List, which we have not watched, but we did a little bit of background research, and it appears to be a comedy, a comedy action thriller starring
Lee Kwang-soo,
famous for Running Man.
And Sohyun, famous for AOA, which is... But if you just look at the posters between the two, they like look like completely different shows.
So while A Killer's Shopping List has that kind of like zany comedy vibe to it, A Shop for Killers has more of a slick noir feeling to it, right?
Yeah. And I guess we could safely say that you do not need to watch The Killer's Shopping List to understand this show.
Well, we didn't.
Yeah, we didn't. And we didn't even know it until we were doing a bit of research.
It's kind of like recently we talked about Badland Hunters, right? And that was a spin-off of Concrete Utopia. So, yeah, two products that seem to be very different in terms of genre even. That's kind of this situation as well, I assume. Again, having said that, we have not seen The Killer's Shopping List, so who knows? Yeah. Maybe that is a slick action noir as well, although the posters do not suggest that.
Yeah, because I thought that A Shop for Killers was based... I think it is, but it says it's based off like a novel or like a light novel or graphic novel of sorts or a webtoon. So it is based off something.
Yeah, everything is based off something nowadays. There's no original ideas anymore.
Yeah, I originally wanted to talk about this show in the same episode or this like shortly after we talked about The Brother's Son.
Okay,
which is which is now been cancelled.
Yeah, well, I think that's because we were watching these two shows concurrently, right? Like, I don't know about yourself, but I was kind of like doing maybe one episode of Brother Son and then one episode of A Shot for Killers, and just kind of alternating between the two.
Yeah, I was kind of doing the same thing. Yeah,
they're pretty similar in terms of narrative, premise? I guess. Yeah, premise. Yeah,
narrative. Yeah.
So basically, both like
killers,
an oblivious, innocent person being thrust into this world of assassins is the vibe of both of the shows, right?
Yeah.
Pretty different, though.
The show is much better than A Brother's Son. Yeah, I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't think it's a controversial opinion at all. I think this is probably a very overlooked show that's on Disney. I just stumbled across this show when I was just looking for YouTube, and I saw the title. Like, that sounds pretty cool. And then I watched a trailer, and then I'm like, oh yeah, this could be like a lot of fun. And then when I started watching it, I was like pretty hooked, like surprisingly more than I expected it to be. I wasn't expecting, you know, like a fucking Band of Brothers or a
I mean, the trailer looks good. Yeah. The trailer made it seem like pretty entertaining. And again, like, this is right up our alley, right? This is like the subject matter Killers. That we tend to gravitate to. Yeah.
I think so.
I think a lot of our best of last year was like just assassin based properties.
Yeah. Maybe I think that's probably our niche now. It's like movies about like assassins and hitmen and stuff. And like, I love these kind of stories as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about this show, non-spoilers first, and then we'll give you a fair spoiler warning before we start dropping major spoilers. If you do want to go in fresh, it is on Disney Plus. So go check it out if you have that subscription. The main character of this show is a girl named Jong Ji-an. And she has her uncle as well, Jong Jin-man. So Jong Ji-an is played by Kim Hye-jun, who I'm not familiar with.
I'm not familiar with her.
She's probably just an up-and-comer, right?
Yeah, she's the only thing I can recognize is that she was in Kingdom, which I haven't watched.
Okay.
So that was the
other. We should watch that.
Netflix,
That looks pretty good.
I think she's in the Takashi Miike Korean show Connect, which we haven't watched yet.
Oh, I wanted to watch that. I put it on my saved list, but I haven't watched it.
Yeah, we haven't watched it yet. Maybe we'll talk about. I mean, fuck, we've got.
It's fucking too many shows, man.
There's too many like good. You know, this is the kind of show that nearly makes me want to pay for.
A lot of them are on Disney Plus. Connect is on Disney Plus as well.
Yeah, the Worst of Evil, which I haven't finished watching.
That's on Disney Plus.
Yeah, that's on Disney Plus. But yeah, like the thing about Jong Ji-an as a main character, and in comparison to the Brother's Son episode, which we talked about, Bruce being a really shit character, is. Jong Ji-an is a character that I'm not the same as Jong Ji-an. You know, I'm not Korean. I'm not a girl. And I have lived somewhat of a pretty privileged life.
You don't know Krav Maga, as far as I know.
I don't know Krav Maga. But Jong Ji-an's character is off the bat, like, immediately compelling to watch. Whether she's the most original character, I don't know. Like, you've probably seen this kind of character in a lot of shows.
She's a stoic teen. Yeah. A stoic... I don't think she's a teen at the... she's like a college student, I think.
Yeah, she's a college student.
There's a couple of time frames within this film, within this show. Mm. But in the present, she is a college student. But so you're saying that although Bruce might be more similar to you...
Yeah,
Jong Ji-an is just more interesting to watch.
Jong Ji-an is much more interesting to watch.
Like a lot, I reckon.
By a lot, yeah. Like, the show kicks off immediately in like a showdown of sorts where Jong Ji-an is trapped in her house, which is kind of in the countryside, and she's being bed on by like, you know, armed men and a sniper, and she's trying to like get access to this gun that's across the room. And then in the room you see like there's like this other kid that's with her, you don't know who he is. And another like short haired kind of assassin looking but injured woman.
Very strong.
So you don't know what's
opening.
Going on.
Extremely
it
strong
is a very
opening,
strong
I would
opening.
Say.
Yeah.
I love a scene where somebody's pinned down by a sniper. You know, I've been this excited about snipers since Enemy at the Gates. But it is always exciting stuff because it's so tense, right? And yeah, like you said, the fact that there are these other characters in the room, but you don't know who they are. You don't really know the context of what's going on. You're just kind of dropped in this situation. It is a bit like the trope of like 3 weeks earlier, you know, the one that Rick and Morty make fun of. Honestly, I don't mind that trope.
This show is pretty tropey. I would say that this show is pretty tropey, but I think it kind of embraces it. Because there are just like a lot of scenes where there's like one really cool assassin that is like killing all the other like highly trained assassins. But with this opening scene, you already get a sense of who Jong Jian is as a person. She's not a highly trained assassin killer, but she is very capable. And then after this, you say like, you know, plays with the spatial formula of cutting back and forth to different aspects of her childhood. And you can see how she has ended up the way that she has. She's not like a good fighter. Like there are various instances in the show where she tries to fight the person, but she's overpowered like pretty easily.
She's a girl, Tavi.
But the thing is, like, just because she's a girl, you know, I think she is still like a strong character, but that's not like, I am besmirching Disney again. That's not just saying that she doesn't have any flaws. She has a lot of flaws. And she's stoic, but she's also vulnerable as well, you know? And I think that's what makes her, like, a great character and more compelling to watch, you know? And sometimes I even prefer, like, female leads like this because you kind of understand it a bit more. Yeah. I guess, like, you know, with us being maybe Asian in Australia, we're kind of on the back foot in a sense. So it's like whether or not like, you know, her being a woman, she's going to be on the back foot physically against these trained assassins, except for Minji, who's just really good at fighting. And she's just cool. I guess she's got cool powers.
Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit more about her.
That's pretty much her role, though. Like, I don't actually think there's much to say about that character, Min, here.
Yeah, she's just a cool femme fatale character.
She's just there
really
to be a
fighting.
Badass. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I liked her character. Yeah.
Yeah, she's good. I thought like there'd be more of kind of a bond developed between Jian and Min here, but I mean, without like dropping major spoilers, that doesn't really happen. She's just kind of there to be a badass.
I think the show's pretty limited in its plot. Most of the show, I think this show is very easy to follow. I think it's a pretty focused show. Like a lot of the entertainment of this show is the tension in these scenes.
Yeah. I mean, there are kind of like two plot lines running concurrently, right? So there's Jian's current situation where she's trying to avoid being murdered by a bunch of assassins that are trying to storm her home. But then there's another plot line that's kind of told through flashback. And this plot line kind of explains how she got into this situation in the first place.
But
even though there are kind of two plot lines happening at the same time, you're right. It is pretty straightforward. And it's like it's intriguing enough, I think, without being overly convoluted. I think comparing those two shows again, The Brother Sun and this show, I think probably the key difference here is pacing and nuance. Just comparing the two characters of Jian and Bruce, like Jian talks a lot less than any of the characters in Brother Sun.
The
plot is explained through action rather than dialogue. That's more attuned to like our preferred aesthetic. And it is a slower show than The Brother Sun, I would say. But like I think that's kind of a refreshing change of pace. I think some people might find this show maybe a bit too slow, but it is kind of just a matter of preference.
I'm not sure if I agree with that.
You don't think it's slow?
I don't think I was ever bored watching this show.
No, I wouldn't say it's boring.
I know, I mean, like I don't feel like there was ever any parts that make it stretch. Like, I mean, you could argue, like, we do find out that Zhong Jian, you know, had a difficult childhood. You know, she was bullied. She was, like, people thought that she was a mute, you know. I mean, that is kind of, like, that is a slower part of the show. But I wouldn't necessarily say that it's particularly slow in terms of, like, you know, it's taking its time to meander a bit. Like, each thing that happens to the characters has a bearing to the plot, to the overarching character. Everything builds character, I think. I actually thought, like, the brother's son is slower because there's a lot of stuff that is brought up that doesn't amount to anything. Yeah. And there's a lot of time wasting. So I guess in this definition of slow, maybe...
Yeah, it's more like movement. It's slow in its movement, I guess, because A Shop for Killers is essentially a bottle episode, right? Where, like, they're just in one central location. A lot of the time, you know, they're kind of like planning what to do rather than doing it. And then...
Yeah.
And obviously there are flashbacks as well. So... Like, the time span that happens in this show, it's less than a day. Whereas brother-son, you know, the time span is much longer, and they're constantly moving and constantly kind of doing stuff. Even if the stuff is irreverent in the end, but, like, they are always moving and always doing stuff and always talking as well. So, like, in that sense, this show is slower in comparison to the brother-son.
I think I would just say it's more concise and it's more consistent with its tone, because A Shop for Killers is always has that sense of a action thriller noir with a little bit of drama. And I've ever since, you know, Brother's Son 2 was cancelled, I've seen some discourse about it, and, like, I don't think it was as beloved as maybe we had thought. Like, there were a lot of people that didn't like it as well. They thought that it was unrealistic and a bit, like, too silly at times.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure if we even talked about it on the episode, but the bit where the grannies, like, come and stop the killing, it's just like, wait a minute, that's fucking stupid. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I completely forgot about that plot line, and then I was just like, yeah.
That's, I mean, it was stupid, but I think it matched the tone of the show. Okay, so
it matched the tone, but then the tone was shifting a lot. Whereas I'm a big fan of tonal shifts, but A Shop for Killers is not trying to be anything too fancy. It's an action. At its core, it is an action show.
But at the same time, I feel like that might be its downfall as well. In that, it might be a little bit too generic to keep going. Like, it's good. I like it. And it's definitely, like, more in line with the kind of TV shows that I like to watch. But there's nothing that really elevates it above any of its contemporaries. Like, if I were to compare this to, let's say, like, Ballerina, where that has kind of like a strong female assassin character in it as well. Or even Kill Boksoon, for example.
Yeah,
I know these are films compared to a TV show, but, like, just like Ballerina had, like, a really strong stylistic choice behind it. And it had, like thematic elements that kind of really resonated with me as well. And Boksoon as well had, like, a strong sense of style, and it was pretty funny as well. Whereas this show, it's kind of a little bit like middle of the run kind of stuff. While I enjoyed this show, I could totally see it not getting a second season. It's a bit too mid, is what I'm saying.
I think I agree a little bit. I don't know. Like, I don't think the show is mid, but it is, there's nothing that really sets it apart from, like, another, like, Korean action show or a Korean bit of meat. Like, you know, The Man from Nowhere had, like, you know, really cool, like, knife fight sequences. It's pretty violent. And you know, you're talking about Kill Boksoon, Ballerina.
Like, even comparing it to The Brother's Son, like, The Brother's Son at least had, like, strong action direction that is unusual. Like, something that you're not that I'm not used to seeing on Netflix, like that kind of Shaw Brothers style kung fu, but in a contemporary setting, you know, like, but this show, even the action is kind of like the same kind of slick Korean action that you see in a lot of stuff.
It's weird because, like, the action probably is better in The Brother's Son, but I kind of enjoyed it more in this show. I think I'm a bit of a sucker for heroic bloodshed.
Yeah.
And I like, there's a decent amount of pew-pew in this movie.
Mm.
I
mean, and the action is creative in this show as well, in A Shop for Killers. Like, I thought it was just going to be a lot of, like, you know, head scissors takedowns and stuff like that. Right? There's like bits where there are drones flying in and they have to kind of figure out how to get around these drones. There's like a weird, like, dog robot thing that comes in one point. There's Min here doing, you know, all the head scissors takedowns and stuff. But, you know, they mix it up a bit, which I really appreciated. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a big segment of action scenes that we can't really talk about because that's a pretty big spoiler.
Mm-hmm. But we'll get to it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those action scenes.
And the flashbacks as well have a lot of action in it. Yeah. So, like, the flashbacks aren't boring. I think that's what got me through it. Like, even though I don't like the use of flashbacks in a narrative sense, I think, like, because they kind of, like, were in themselves a self-contained story, I think that's kind of what... like got me through it. I think if they just use the flashbacks to explain why she's able to get out of sticky situations, that would have been a problem for me. Like, that was kind of the first use of flashbacks that they had. Like, she's pinned down by this sniper and she's trying to figure out how she can get to that gun. And then she has a flashback where, like, Jin Man, her uncle, is explaining about blind spots. And then it flashes back forward and she, like, gets out of the situation using that knowledge. And I'm like, oh, I hope this is not going to be the show. I hope it's not going to be her flashing back to get out of a variety of sticky situations. And it wasn't that, in fairness. Yeah. So that was good. Yeah.
Yeah. The show's got some pretty, like, strong side characters as well. We talked about, like, Min-hee, who's probably the weakest out of the side characters.
Yeah. I mean, she's a badass.
But in terms of, you don't know that much about her, but I think that's what makes her cool. But, like, we've got Pasim, like the Thai guy.
The Thai guy. I love Pasim. He's so Thai. I love how Thai he is. Just his, like, his cadence is really fun to listen to, like a Thai guy speaking Korean.
Yeah.
And he's so blue-collar as well, like a Thai guy would be in Korea.
I love him. There's a pretty cute plot line. I don't remember fully, but, like, Jinmon won't let Jian date someone unless, like, she lands, like, a blow on him. A punch.
She wants to move out, I think.
She wants to move out. Yeah, that's right. So she tries to hit him, but, like, he's really good at, like, fighting, so he just dodges it all. But, like, then she wants to learn, like, Muay Thai from Pasim.
Yeah.
Pasim. That's what I can see here. Yeah. It's just, like, this really lighter-hearted segment of the show that was just fun to watch, you know, just her trying to learn, like, Muay Thai.
And he's, like, beating the shit out of her. Just, like, tiger-kneeing her.
Like, even though, like, Jian is... not really interested in becoming, I guess, the leader or the new owner of Murder Help, which is another big plot point where she finds out that her uncle Jinmon has this underground shop, basically, in the black market, where there's all these guns underneath the house, and it's basically a black market for guns, and these assassins are trying to kill her so they can get access to all this weaponry and, like, his legacy, basically.
Yeah.
But she kind of doesn't want to do that, right? She's just like, oh, you know, I'm just a fucking college student.
Well, she's
a
bit conflicted about it, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But she's always a character, I think, that is doing something, you know. Even if it's not something that she super wants to do, like, she's always working towards it. Mm. Like, she's an active protagonist, which I really enjoy. And, like, going back to The Brother's Son, my biggest issue with Bruce is that he is not an active protagonist. He's just sits there and complains and it's
man,
just
I thought we were done with ragging on the brother's son in our brother's son episode. Yeah, probably
should be,
but it's still kicking its corpse even though it's been cancelled.
I'm sorry, brother's son.
I appreciate like, what they tried to do with that show. And it is, honestly, it is a shame that it got cancelled because I think the second season might have been better.
Yeah, it's definitely like, it doesn't set a good precedence like of it being cancelled because like, oh, I guess like, you know, Asians aren't very popular. We don't need to fund another action movie. So I'm disappointed that it's cancelled in that sense. But I think what I'm talking about is in a sense of like writers writing these kind of shows.
Mm. You gotta write your point of view character well. You gotta have them do stuff.
In a straightforward action show, yes, I think. If you're writing something a bit more like weirder, experiments.
You're talking about Beau is Afraid, which you were just watching recently. Yeah, I'm guessing that character doesn't actually do that much.
Not really, but we're not talking about that show. Even though you should watch it, it's a great movie. She's just doing stuff, you know, and I think that's why like you want to watch her. And she's also like the childhood stuff. Like there's the drama. It's melodramatic enough that it's like, You kind of feel for the, you can kind of see that they've had a hard life, you know. It's not the easiest. Like, again, Asians do like bullying like no other country's cinema.
Oh yeah, the bullies are so mean in this show.
they're so mean. They lock her in like at night. They like lock her in this fucking
only
room
in Asian
night.
Films are bullies like full Asian films and Stephen King based films. The bullies are fully on board with just murdering a child.
Just
straight
murdering
up.
A child. Man,
who's raising these kids, man?
Man, I've been listening to, I think she's pretty famous, The Rotten Mango. I think it's Stephanie. She talks a lot about like true crime stuff. And she's covered some like incidences like in China and in Korea where like it's students like basically murdering other students and not having any remorse. And it's like, oh yeah, you can see how this is kind of like shown in their films, you know. It is just, it's and it adds a lot. I'm not sure if I liked the CGI hyena, but you know, we've talked a lot about Korean CGI.
There was a CGI hyena? When was that?
There's like this CGI hyena wolf that she always sees when she's like in
She sees that at the hospital room, right? Like when
When she's locked in the thing, But it doesn't really add that much, but that's a bit of a smaller nitpick. There is another supporting character who, I quite enjoyed him as well. Bae Jong-min. He's the guy.
Oh, yeah. Her friend. Like her friend that's like a hacker.
He used to work for like, Jin Man. Before like Jin Man had apparently committed suicide, which is that's a big plot point because like Jian kind of inherits this stuff or you know because her uncle has died, but they think the death is suspicious.
Because Jin Man is a badass, so why would he kill himself? Really, I like Jung Min as well. We'll probably come back to him. I do like what that actor is doing with that character, so I find it really fun.
There is a shift with his character, and I think he's done both roles pretty well. There is a central antagonist who I quite enjoyed as well. Is that the... No, it's...
Seung-jo. Seung-jo is the sniper. So he's kind of like leading the charge, the siege on the house. So he's leading it, but from really far away. He's just kind of sending waves of goons in to try to get...
But he's kind of
Jian.
That, like, fairly over-the-top, like, jerk. he's he's very snarky. I would say,
he's good. He's kind of like rough around the edges. He's a little bit of a psycho, but he's mainly just a jerk.
And he's just like, he's a little like, he's just a little like, tisking with the, like, just like,
yeah, he's kind of exasperated a lot of the time. Just frustrated that things aren't going his way.
It was pretty enjoyable.
Aside from that, there's kind of like a rotating roster of bad guys, like that he's sending in after Jian. They all have pretty similar vibes. They're kind of just like dudes that are there to do a job, really. Like, I kind of like this world of assassins that they have built in this show, where it's it is very similar to Kill Boksoon, or even a John Wick scenario, where like they're just professionals. They're just there to do a job. It's not really anything personal. Like, they might be having a drink with the guy one day, but then, you know, when there's money up for grabs, they'll kill his niece.
Sure. it's cool. Like, even though, like, I'm not like, I'm glad that Australia has super strict gun laws, and I would never want like guns to be that, you know, easy to get here. But like, watching a show like this, it's like, man, just watching, like, looking at a lot of guns and, like, loading guns and reloading guns and checking shit. It's always just, like, fun to watch.
I can see why actors get addicted to the gunplay. There's something very satisfying about watching like, somebody reload a gun.
it is very cool. I wonder, because I'd assume Korea would have even stricter gun laws. I guess when it comes to prop guns, there must be some kind of legal loophole, because particularly in Australia, Victoria, it's really hard to like have guns in anything. Usually you'd have to go to like New South Wales or Queensland to comfortably have like weapons in.
Well, I think South Korea in general is a lot more supportive of their, you know, the media. The performing arts side of things in Australia might be, so I feel like probably movies get a pass.
True, they get a lot of funding. I think I'd assume that this show would have had a pretty small budget as well. I can't find any numbers, but I think they've done pretty well. You can definitely tell that there were bits where they were stretching the episodes. Like, we see the sniper intro basically again, like almost in its entirety. I'm like, oh, okay, I can see what you're doing here. You needed to fill out the 50 minutes, so that's fine.
There's a bit in this show, Tavi, where I was like, I don't think it's a spoiler, but there's basically there's a flashback of Jian's like life, like her early life, and then later down the line there's another flashback episode where it tells exactly the same story but from the perspective of Jinman, and I'm like, man, this is you're really pushing it with me in these flashbacks, guys.
It is,
so some of it is a bit stretch.
I feel like watching this show is like watching a live action anime. Because they use this technique a lot.
Anime is notorious for having flashbacks that just like halt the progress of the show in its tracks.
But aside from that as a criticism, but as a positive, like, you and I have struggled with watching a lot of live action adaptations of anime, because they don't feel like anime. But this show, I guess because it is based off a webtoon, it feels like I'm watching a live action anime somehow. Because I think the situations are grounded enough that its unrealism seems plausible. Like, again, like in real life, a person like Min-hee going into a room full of guys and scissor kicking your head, you just get shot and you just die. She would head scissor kick one person and then she'd just get gunned down and then that's it.
Well, I think it comes down to the level of world building. Like, and that's the thing. Like, with a show like this where it's a pretty enclosed world, like, they don't have to spend a lot of time building that world, but it still feels like a world that could exist in anime. Whereas something that's like an anime adaptation, like, an anime has spent so many episodes building this world, And then the task of a live action adaptation is to condense
that
lore into a few episodes. Yeah. So it's almost an impossible task to do that, right?
Yeah.
And
the only
successes is something like Kenshin, where the world is almost like a realistic take of that period of time in Japan. So there's kind of less work on the remakes, on the live action adaptation side to do that. But something like One Piece, something like Avatar, The Last Airbender, which I haven't watched the live action series, to be fair, but
it's such a hard
task to kind of condense all of those episodes and all the world that has been built over the course of these episodes into just a few episodes. Whereas this is kind of like, it's a bit simpler to do. And that's why you can kind of spend a bit more time getting the feel of the show right.
Yeah. I also think somehow it is, I'm not sure how it is, but there's something about Asian media that kind of just gets that feeling better than any other show. Like, I've seen a number of like Korean TV shows now and a couple, and they do have this same kind of feeling.
Mm.
And even for movies, there's something like a little bit anime about it. And I think that might be just the Asian way of storytelling, which I haven't really sat down to be able to like study properly, but it's something I would want to get to know to be able to like know more intricately.
It's interesting. Yeah. Like sometimes a Japanese production can just get away with anime stuff in live action for some reason.
Even.
Like Alice in Borderland would have been ridiculous if it was a Western production. Somehow.
It's very true. Yeah. Somehow it just... Because, yeah, Alice in Borderland is another perfect example of... there was an anime of it, but the show just... It just works as a live action adaptation somewhat.
Short guy with bleach blonde long hair comes in who's really smart, like to a ridiculous level of intelligence comes in. And you just don't question it. It's just like, I'm watching an anime with real people in it. It's fine.
I think it's a do. If you write your characters well enough and you set your tone well enough, I think people forego the unrealisticness of it. But I'm not sure, we may or may not cover it at some point, because I have been watching the Avatar cartoon and I have seen the first episode of the live action. And I would have to say with the Avatar cartoon, it is very close to an anime. It's like probably the most anime an American production has been. And it's great. I think they've captured it really well. So it can be done, but there's a certain spice that I'm not sure I can quite explain. But they managed to do it in the cartoon. So it's there's something there. So I don't think it is just it being Asian. You know, I think there's just a mentality that is quite popular in Asia, but I'm sure any other country can pull it off. It's just like just knowing the intricacies, or just knowing instinctively, or being inspired from it. Yeah. So it's just cool.
It's just cool.
It's just cool.
Going back to Shop for Killers though, I do want to give a shout out to Lee Dong Wook playing Jong Jin Man. He's great.
Yeah.
I like him.
Really, I want to talk, like, his character is pretty hard to talk about because I really like his character a lot too. And he's arguably the second protagonist. Like,
yeah, he gets a lot of play in the flashbacks.
Like,
you get to explore a bit more of his story in the flashbacks. He's
really cool.
Essentially he's just a trained badass that grows a conscience. But I like the portrayal of him as well, because Lee Dong-wook, he's not a physically imposing guy, I would say. In fact, I'm pretty sure his fans tease him for being a weakling.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And
I don't know that much about him.
I've seen him in Running Man a couple of times. He's pretty good friends with Song Ji-hyo.
Really? Yeah.
But yeah, he's a bit snarky, and I like that. I like kind of his sleepy-eyed demeanor. I think it works well with kind of like the... the sociopathic tendencies that you need to portray like an assassin type character. You know, he's kind of got like a dead-eyed stare when he needs it, but he's also has this kind of warm energy when he's interacting with like his mates, like Pasin. I think, you know, his interactions with Ji-an, where they kind of just like, she doesn't really like him in general. He's a bit of like an overprotective Ajishi. But at the same time, you know, he's very firm in his like rules and his belief system. I like all that. And he does action pretty well, the action that he's in.
He does arguably, like, especially in the second half of the series, he does a lot of action.
With his nemesis, which we haven't talked about yet.
Which we haven't talked about. I guess it's a spoiler thing.
Should we get into spoilers?
Should we just get into spoilers?
But I mean, if you haven't watched this show, if you're like us and you're predisposed to liking stuff about assassins and criminal underworlds, I'd check this out for sure. It's very good.
Yeah, as Dan said, it's a little bit middle of the road, but for me, this show was just really easy to watch. I think all the characters are very compelling. All the action scenes are pretty cool. I honestly enjoyed this show a lot more than I expected to. I thought that this would just be kind of like a throwaway show that I would watch and not return to. But I was watching bits and pieces of it again the other day, and I was like, "Yeah, man, this is a cool fucking show." Like, so definitely recommend it, especially because I want a season two, because I want to see how the story ends. If that's kind of a spoiler.
Not sure what's happening with season two, which we will get into in the spoiler section, which is now. Big time spoilers
So what happens in this show is we find out that Jong Jin-man was part of a mercenary group, so he's like ex-military.
A group called Babylon.
Yeah, and basically all the assassins, Songju, like him and Songju and a few others were like, they were part of the same mercenary group, but they had a particular member in the group called Bael. and he's the supreme evil in the show, and he was my favorite character in the show. Bael. I really enjoyed Bael. He's just an absolute like psychopath. Like he is not humanized at all in the show. He's just evil because he enjoys being a bad person, and like that's fine. Just have your super evil guy.
Yeah.
But he's not like, I wouldn't say he's like a Joker kind of evil.
No, he's not over the top. He's clearly a psychopath that just likes to hurt people.
He's not over the top, but he is over the top.
Yeah, like the actor.
So you know what I'm saying.
Johansson, he's doing a really good job at being pretty charismatic, but also he's just a bug-eyed psycho. He really treads that line well. It reminds me a lot of Jung Woo-sung, you know, like that kind of like
bug-eyed intensity, bug-eyed cool intensity. So, I mean, he has a couple of scuffles with Jin-won because he keeps like killing innocent people on their jobs and forcing people to fight. And I think the last straw is that they find a room full of kidnapped prostitutes, and what he does is he like chucks a grenade.
Like,
what the fuck are you doing? And I think Jin-man is like, I'm gonna fucking report you or whatever, like, because he doesn't want Bael back on his team for like another job, because he just keeps, he kills his own men, because he got spotted.
Even though Jin-man can't really prove that, but like, he's clearly bad news. It's just this. He's the one, there's always the one coworker that you just can't get along with. This is this guy for Jin-man.
This is this guy, and it's interesting because to go through this backstory, Ji-an actually takes a back seat. You don't see her for like a few episodes. And this is a huge risk sometimes, because sometimes I'm not the biggest fan of switching protagonists when I've really been enjoying a particular protagonist, because I really like Ji-an as a protagonist, but Because what they've introduced is Bale, who I just thoroughly enjoyed. They've added cool action scenes, but yeah. It makes sense, you know. We kind of want to find out who Jin-Man is. And also, if you also think about it, as you're saying, it's a bottle episode. Jian is not, like, a fighter, you know. So there's not much more she can really do.
Well, she knows Muay Thai.
Until, like, yeah, she knows Muay Thai. That's not going to do much against, like, guns and shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought, like, I wasn't sure how I would feel about, like, this sudden departure. Because it is a bit of a structural narrative whiplash. But because they've made these elements so entertaining to watch, I didn't mind. Yeah. I thought, yeah,
I think it's the intrigue that gets you through it as well. Because throughout the show, you do kind of want to know what is happening with Jin-Man. Like, why is this happening to Ji-An? Because they are, like, the two narratives are linked in that way. Like, whatever Jin-Man did in his past is why everybody is kind of going after Ji-An now. So in that way, you do kind of want to know. Like, once I got past, like, that one episode where it was just the same story but told from Jin-Man's point of view, just that story of, like, Jian's parents getting murdered, like, I was on board with everything that was happening with Jin-Man. Like, the charisma of the two characters there, Beiru and Jin-Man, like, is palpable. And, I just like that, you know, the idea of just a group of professionals just doing jobs. But yeah, they don't get along very well.
I guess, like, yeah, this is where we see where, like, Min-hee comes in, and she's like, she was another, like, prostitute.
Yeah, again,
or something.
She's not super developed even in the flashbacks. Yeah. She's a prostitute saved, like, and then she's just kind of good at stuff. So they
And she just learns. She just learns from Pasim, and then now she's like
not even.
Taking out groups of dudes.
She doesn't even learn from Pasim. She learns a little bit from him, but she's just like, there's a bit where his mute friend is kind of looking after her, right? In the safe house, and then like, while he's gone, she kind of reassembles these weapons, and I didn't do that. Who did that? She must have done that.
It is like pretty mysterious. I would honestly, I mean, if they were gonna do another spin-off, like, I would be pretty interested to watch a Min-hee.
I mean, it's not that interesting though, because she's just naturally talented at that stuff.
Has to be a reason. You can't just be good with guns.
I think that's the implication though. It's just she saw him do it once and she just could just replicate it.
But like, where does that come from? There's got to be something. You can delve into that with some interesting story.
I want to see the story of the mute guy that's an assassin somehow.
Yeah, he's cool too.
He disappointingly dies quite early in the flashbacks. You know, he's got the signature brass knuckles, which is really cool. I love brass knuckles as just like a weapon of choice, because they're so impractical, but like, just really, really cool weapon of choice, you know. And he's mute. Like, how does that even aid you in combat? You know, it wouldn't.
But he's just mute.
I guess he's there because his brother is part of the team at the end, who we haven't really talked about because he's also not that interesting. He's allergic to sunlight.
Oh yeah, that's right. He's like he's the one that he ends up looking after the servers and stuff. But his introduction comes into another, like, part, another really tense part that doesn't actually involve any fighting, and it involves him. His name is Brother, and Bae Jeon Min, who we haven't talked about too much, but he's like Jian's classmate who's been helping her since her uncle, because he used to work for Jin-Man. So
very fresh-faced, baby-faced boy,
extremely baby-faced boy, for the first four episodes at the very least, until you come across Brother, who is this kind of weird guy. He's got like that kind of typical nerdy character tendencies where he's a bit like OCD at some points and stuff and whatever. But he says to Gia, like, you can't trust Jong-min. And he actually, like, you know, ties him down at one point or has a gun to him. Well, he incapacitates him to an extent. And then Jian points a gun at both of them because she's like pretty overwhelmed, like, who do I trust?
Because they both seem shady at this point.
Yeah, they both seem shady, and I think the show does really well with, like, you almost want to believe both of them. Like, I wasn't sure who. Because, like, I think what you're supposed to side with is John Min, right? Because he's been there at the start. But it is kind of weird. Like, this guy has never been, like, he's just, yeah, I'm just this dude that's helped your uncle and I got a baby face. So he's, like, the more, you naturally want to believe that guy more. But, yeah, he's shady. But then who's this fucking weird dude that he has been living underneath you for, like, all these years,
videotaping you in your private quarters. Yeah.
That's fucking weird. So I think it's really, really tense. And, like, you don't know what the outcome is, even though you kind of
except that obviously Jungmin is going to betray her because obviously he is, you know?
Like, yeah. But, like, it lets you believe it. And I don't want to kick its corpse again, but we were talking about in our Brother's Son episode where they were trying to do that with Grace, but it's just like, you know, obviously that she's just going to betray Bruce. So there's no, like, tension in that, like, whatsoever. It was done poorly. All right, let's just say that. But, like, for this, like, show to do it, like quite simply, like, yeah, I thought it was really, really well done. It was tense and there was, like, no fighting. It's just like you really put into the shoe of Jian.
Yeah, there's a lot of paranoia in that scene, which is pretty effective.
Yeah, and again, compelling characters, man. It's like you believe it. And, like, again, you know, me and Jian, we're miles apart from, like, similarities, but you get it, you know? Yeah. Like, the show's putting you into this character's shoes.
Yeah, for sure. Like, POV, from Jian's point of view, like, it's a difficult decision to make. From a viewer's point of view, like, obviously, Jungmin is shady and you should not be trusted. And he does betray her. He betrays her.
So, he's one of the bullies that locked her into the thing. Like, and then when he says that, it's like, you fucking
he's
bastard.
Not only a bully, Tavi, but he's the smart bully. The one that, he's the intelligent bully. He's the guy in Confessions. His villainous turn is so deliciously evil. I'm smarter than everybody, and I got into this underworld through my intelligence alone. Like, I don't have any combat ability, but I'm just that smart that I could infiltrate this criminal organization.
It's very Asian, right? It's very anime the way that his his villain arc turns, and it's very enjoyable to watch.
He's just an awful incel, you know?
It's
so good.
And like, casting these, like, baby face actors to be, like, really evil is kind of like a stroke of genius, because there's, like, this level of, like, punchability, because you just want to, like, I don't know why, like, evil characters with baby faces and who are, well, I guess, are weak.
Yeah, and who are, but also the smartest person in the room. You know, like,
but you just want to fucking punch him in the face.
Man.
Yeah, you just like, oh, you fucking prick. She, like, thankfully, she does get the one up on him at a point. I don't remember, but she, like, she manages to escape. I forgot what she does, but what Jian does. But yeah, there's, like, this kind of, like, cat and mouse kind of thing. And then she, like, ties him up. But
he cops an axe to the face eventually. Yeah.
He just gets killed by, I keep forgetting. Songju. Yeah. Just cops an axe. He has kind of, like, an evil, not an evil gasm, but he's like, he just is so evil that he, like, a evil cosis, I guess. Yeah. He just, like, loses it because he's that evil.
He does a scar face and
gets an axe to the face. But there was a bit where, I thought back on the shoe, like, okay, like, for I was saying, like, Brother Son did something that was so obvious that, like, yeah, with Grace. This show does that too, in it reveals something very, like, it wasn't very subtle about what happens with Jinmon.
You're talking about the reveal that Jinmon is actually not dead.
Yeah, the reveal that Jinmon is actually not dead. Okay. Because
so you're at the start of the show, you're led to believe that Jinmon has committed suicide. But obviously we know that's not the truth, because Jinmon is a badass and why would he commit suicide? So we think that there's been a murder. But then through flashbacks, you learn that Jinmon and Bale have a confrontation in which Bale is seemingly killed, but he's not actually killed. So then when he recovers, he goes and seeks revenge on Jinmon by killing his brother and sister-in-law, who is, are Ji-an's parents. He also tries to kill Ji-an, but fails. And then Jin-man spirits Ji-an away to live in this fortress that he's built with his shop underground. So the way that who's that character, the incel guy,
Jeongmin.
The way that Jeongmin ties into this is that he is sent in by Babylon to infiltrate Jinman's operation, and then eventually he is caught by Jinman as being a spy, and then Jeongmin plays Jinman a tape, a recording of Ji-an pleading for help. So he makes it seem that Babylon has captured Ji-an, and the only way for Jin-man to save Ji-an is for him to kill himself. So he goes to the bathroom and he seemingly cuts his throat, killing himself. The reveal at the end is that that didn't happen, actually. He's just alive.
He's just alive, Because it's like the way that, like, Jeongmin... I think it's because, like, Jeongmin is... such a pathetic looking character. And I think I'm wondering if, like, it was intentional that he's supposed to instill that we know that basically Jin-man is alive, because when he's like, yeah, I killed the fucking, I'm like, this guy's supposed to be such a fucking badass, but I killed him. It's like, no, you didn't. So I'm not sure if it was the intention of the show to, like, you know, say, oh yeah, Jin-man must still be alive. Because, and they don't really kind of explicit any other clues after that. But as soon as that happens, because I remember I messaged you, because I think you'd finished the show before I did. And then I was like, yeah, Jin-man's still alive, isn't he? And you didn't say anything. But like after that, I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure Jin-man is alive. And, you know, when all is said and done and the dust has settled, like, we see that the cleanup crew's cleaning up all the bodies, and then this car drives in, and then it reveals that Jin-man is actually alive. And you kind of, there's another hint as well where Brother says something to Min-hee. It's after he's left Jeongmin and Ji-an alone. I think he says something to Min-hee, is that, well, I left her alone because Jin-man wants Ji-an to know, to learn how to make her own decisions. That's what he wanted. So I put that in a sense that maybe Jin-man, in his probably lovable, looking after his niece, but maybe probably in a dangerous trial by fire kind of way, let her, like, experience all this shit as kind of like a coming of age thing, where she learns how to deal with all this stuff. And he's always giving her choices, you know. It's like, maybe it was a test, because she finds, like, this file, and it says, like, if you don't want anything to do with this, just, like, sign this form. You have your new identity and you can leave forever. Yeah. So I think this ruse was probably, you know, a very unwork-safe way of training your niece to become, like, an assassin or head of the assassin world or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few bits of foreshadowing. I think there's a flashback scene where they go camping, and Jin-man pretends that he's sick, and at one point he's kind of on the phone to somebody saying, "Oh, the drugs really work. They make you feel like you're dying or whatever." That kind of hints towards how he was able to fake his death so convincingly. But yeah, like there are a couple of holes in this plot.
There'd have to be. Yeah.
For one thing, like, okay, so Jeongmin plays this tape to Jin-man and says the only way that you'll be able to save your niece is if you kill yourself. But also, Jin-man knows the rules that he's kind of set. Like, if Jin-man dies, that opens the contract to Ji-an, and all these assassins will go after her. So there's no way that he would be able to protect. Like, him killing himself would put her in more danger than if he just left it alone, you know? Like, so that's a big clue that, well, maybe he hasn't actually killed himself. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's not intentional, that revelation. I think that revelation, the way that it's kind of structured, is meant to be like, oh my god, you orchestrated Jin-man's death. That's crazy. He's actually dead. But Yeah, for me and you, is kind of like
as a viewer of entertainment. Yeah, we just like, yeah, he's definitely, because he's just too cool. Yeah, and when you're watching the flashback of him, like, he has some really cool fight scenes with Bale.
Yeah.
In
like, yeah, yeah, guess, like, I, even I, as a character, so, yeah, there's no way that this badass would be killed like, by this baby face incel, you know?
Baby face incel with fucking AI deep fake voice. Like, come on, man. Yeah. Like,
doesn't really make much sense.
Yeah, it didn't make much sense. So there you go. But I mean, yeah, I mean, this show is—it's not without its plot holes and contrivances and stuff.
Another big plot hole is, like, so Bale and Jinman have this rivalry, right? Because Bale likes killing people, killing innocent people, and Jinman's not all about that, right? So Bale kind of has his followers that like him because he's strong, I guess, and Jinman has his followers that like him because he's like level-headed and like not a psychopath.
Not a psychopath. Yeah, yeah.
But then they also have the organization that they work with called Babylon, right? So like, when Bale recovers from his explosion injuries and goes after Jinman's family, Babylon seems to like support his decision to do that and back him up, even though like there's no monetary gain for going after Jinman's family. Like, the company itself shouldn't really support Bale at all, right? Like, because the boss guy seems to be on good terms with Jinman, like they seem to be mates, but like he chooses to back this Bale guy that's just a fucking psychopath and like support the murder of this like lovely couple and their daughter. Like, that doesn't really make sense either to me.
It's because, you know, the Babylon's the family, they're the real family, not Jinman's actual family.
Bale is clearly a liability. Like, like, out of the two people, Jinman and Bale, you'd be looking after Jinman. Like, he's the level-headed asset that's equally as strong as Bale. Like, I know Bale kind of got the better of him in that final fight, but like, Jinman's pretty good at what he does, and he's not a fucking psycho. So you'd support Jinman, presumably.
Oh, but you see, Bale would get the job done, man, because he has no feelings,
I guess. And he's still out there somewhere, he's still out there.
Yeah, that was, I was a bit disappointed that, because they were kind of building up Bale to have like a final confrontation, but I guess they're saving that for a season two, which might not happen.
Probably not, I would say.
Yeah, unfortunately, because, hopefully, you know, with the millions of listeners that we have who listen to this, we should watch this show, then we can get a season two.
Yeah,
I mean, if the Brothers Son, a show that was on top 10 Netflix for a little while, was axed because it didn't get enough viewers, then I don't think this is going to get a show, a season two.
I feel like this show is probably cheaper to make than Brothers Son.
Yeah.
So it's got that going for it. And also, this is Disney Korea, so Disney Korea's call.
I mean, good on you, Disney. You know, like, I've been a pretty harsh critic of you, but watching this show, Revenants, and bits of The Worst of Evil at friends' places, you've almost convinced me to get at least maybe the trial, so I can watch these shows, because they're good. And if you produce good stuff, then I'll support you, man. Like, it's all right, Disney. Like, some of your American stuff hasn't been the best of recent years, but you make good Korean shows, and I'm down for that.
That's all, like, we ask for. It's good Korean
just make
stuff.
Good stuff. You know? Yeah, it's good. Recently, is Hulu Disney?
They're
just owned by Disney.
I think they might be owned by Disney, or Disney acquires the rights to Hulu stuff fast.
They're basically Disney.
So it's all corporations eating other corporations, Darby. I can't keep track of it.
and a show that we probably will cover, but we haven't started watching. Oh, I haven't started watching it yet. They made Shogun, man, which is apparently pretty good.
Unless it isn't, in which we retract everything that we've said about Shogun. Well, you'll see in our Shogun episode whether we liked it or not. I haven't watched any of it yet, so.
We'll see, But I've heard, and even from from Yuta's perspective, when we did our Godzilla episode, he has been watching it. So,
but Japanese Yuta people seem to like your stuff. Yuta is a very polite Japanese man, so
yeah,
we'll see.
We'll see. I think just make good stuff, Disney. You know, you don't have to like save the world with your media. Just make good stuff, and the rest will fall into place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I got that much more to say. I'm sure there was, but I've probably like long forgotten it. And yeah.
Yeah. No. I think we're good for a shop of killers. A shop for killers. Yeah.
A shop for killers. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good stuff. Keep it coming.
Yeah. Do watch it. Because I want a season two. Because I want to see the conclusion with Bale. And maybe a team up with like Jian and Jinmon, or not a team up, but like to see how they work together to solve the issue of Bale. If I don't get a season two, at least like release the webtoon in like English or something, and then I can like read it and find out what happens, because it's cool. Yeah, I really like the characters. Like, nothing about this show is super innovative, but it is very, very, very solid, I think. And that's why I've enjoyed it this much. Yeah,
I agree. All right, guys, but what did you think of A Shop for Killers? Did you enjoy it as much as we did? Let us know. You can get in touch with us at twoasianblokes@gmail.com. you can join our Facebook group to be part of the conversation, or you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at twoasianblokes to see what we're up to. Thank you, as always, for listening.
Yeah, and we'll see you next time on the Brothers Son Season 2 review.
Continue to just kick that show.
I feel bad. I do apologize for kicking that show.
I mean, we didn't like it that much, but, you know, yeah, it had potential.
It sounds like I hated it. I don't hate it. I would recommend watching it. Well, I guess it doesn't really matter now because it's not returning. But do support like good Asian American media, even though a lot of it is it's mixed. But
support it. I do. But if it's not that good, say that it's not that good. You don't have to suck up to it either.
Yeah.
We can have an open and honest discussion about it. But yeah, support it nonetheless.
Until we get bullied into an apology, which we will do, not for Brother Son, but probably for some other stuff.
I will never apologize for my opinions on Brother Son.
Only on your opinions about BTS.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not ready for that.
You literally don't want to die.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough. Survival's pretty important, so you got to know when to... I know my limits. Lose the battle.
All right, guys. We'll see you later.
See you later, guys.